Thanks, Peter, and thanks to all for coming. Sadly, Yuan couldn't make it as he didn't get the visa in time. What I thought I would do is I'll structure given. It's gonna be a relatively light talk in terms of proofs and stuff, but hopefully I'll tell you a lot of facts which are motivated by this program I've been interested in for last several years on how do easy optimization problems behave when there is a little bit of noise. Somehow the path from this to CSPs and bounded with CSPs is kind of what I want to convey in this talk. Okay. Of course, what is a CSP problem? We all know what it is. You have some constraints, very loosely speaking, and you want to find some solution which obeys all these constraints. This is the CSP problem. A quintessential example, you know, very important from optimization viewpoint in practice is to solve, for example, the linear system over, say, finite field, AX equals B. You want to solve for this thing. And this is, of course, easy. So we know the Gaussian elimination algorithm to do this. So the theme is going to be, you take an easy problem like this, but what happens if there is no perfect solution, but there is some noise in this data? Maybe you took the right-hand side B and you changed some of the entries. So there's no perfect solution, but there is a near perfect solution which satisfies, let's say, 99% of this equation simultaneously. So what can you do in these kinds of things? How does it change the complexity? Okay, and it turns out that in this case, for example, the problem essentially becomes very intractable. It's hard to even satisfy, you know, epsilon fraction of the equations for anything. Okay, so this is one flavor of result. And why is this? There is a celebrated theorem of Hostad, a special case of which for binary fields I covered in the summer school, the beginning of this program. And here it says that if you take any finite field FQ and you give me a linear system, and in fact the linear system can be sparse. Each equation can simply be of the form x plus y plus z equals something, just depending on three variables. So that's more like a CSP of arity 3. And suppose I tell you that it's 1 minus epsilon satisfiable, which means, and this sort of 1 minus epsilon will occur a lot in this talk. And what I mean by this is that there is a solution which satisfies 1 minus epsilon of the constraints or linear equations here. Then what can you do? Then Hostad says that he essentially can do nothing because he proves that it's NP hard for you to find an assignment which even satisfies a little bit more than 1 over Q fraction of the equations. And 1 over Q is kind of the trivial ballpark because if you just pick a random assignment without even looking at your instance, that's kind of what you would get. And doing anything teeny bit better than that is hard. Okay, and I just pick epsilon for both of these things to, you know, just keep number of symbols down. So it basically says, the problem is very, very hard. You can be near satisfiable and you cannot even do anything on trivial. Essentially, a small amount of noise, as long as epsilon is greater than zero, it completely destroys the tractability of this problem. So this is over, finite fields or even finite groups. And the result also extends to linear equations over reals, for example. So this connects to, for example, the infinite template CSPs we talked about. So there also this phenomena occurs. Okay, and this we showed in 2007. There's a simpler proof from earlier this year of these guys. Okay, so I want to give some more examples of problems which may not be that CSP-like, but I think they are still very important problems. So here is a very important problem in practice in machine learning. So here you're given a bunch of points, let's say in some high-dimensional space, some M points, and you're also given labels, plus and minus. So the pluses are the red points and these are things. So this is supposed to be a high dimensional space. And the goal in this learning half space problem is I pick the data to have this nice structure that it is separable. So the idea is to, you want to find a hyperplane such that all the red points are on one side and the blue points on the other side. Okay, and that's this hyperplane here. Okay, this is a very, you know, important problem in machine learning. For example, these things could be messages. After you take your email message and make it into some feature space, you might want to know if it is a spam or not. And often, there's no reason you would expect a nice hyperplane to separate it, but in practice, after some modifications, this does arise a lot. So you might want to do this, and this is actually easy. So if your data has this perfect separation, then for example, if you don't care about efficiency so much, you can do linear programming, and of course, there are faster methods for this case. Now again, what happens, in practice, you may not have this perfect separation, so there may be noise and so on. So data may not have this nice structure. So in this case, what can you do? So for example, you get some more junk, so so if you do it this way, whichever way you pick your hyperplane, you're going to make some mistakes. And then the natural optimization version is, given such data, can you find me a half space which is correct on most examples or incorrect on as few examples. Okay, very much like a sort of max CSP, min CSP like thing. Okay, and unfortunately this also has a very strong negative result. What is known is that even if there is a half space which is correct on most of the examples, 1 minus epsilon figures again, you cannot even find a half space which is correct on 50% of the examples, anything more than 50%. Okay. And once again, 50% is very trivial because you could say every message is a spam or everything is not spam, and you know, one of those two is going to be correct half the time. Right? So again, that's sort of the trivial ballpark. Small amount of noise destroys an easy problem and nothing you can do. Okay, of course people solve these problems in practice, but then the idea is that they either assume that the data has some nice distribution or the noise has some nice distribution. Here, remember, it's like in the CSP world, everything is worst case. Worst case data, worst case noise. That's good, important to keep in mind. So that will be the setting we work in this talk. And in fact, even worse things are true. In fact, the hardness holds even if your data is so nice that you not only have a good half space, but in fact a very special half space, which is simply takes the AND of some attributes. Even in this case, the same hardness holds. Okay? So not so important for this talk, but just say this phenomena seems very pervasive in learning problems. Here is another problem, which is ranking with errors. So suppose I give you a directed acyclic graph, then of course we know that we can topological sort its vertices so that all the edges go forward. Okay, it's a perfect ranking where there are no back edges, okay, no upsets. And this is of course easy to find if the graph is an acyclic graph. And in fact, this is an example, we were in Mikhail Pinsker's talk. This was one of the examples, early examples he was using. This is an infinite template CSP, and this is an easy thing to design. Okay, that's all. Okay. So I'll often intersperse my slides with jargon, but that's more to sort of, you know, so you see the connections with CSPs. But if you don't get some of those, it's not so important. And now suppose let's take a graph which is not acyclic, like this graph where I just reverse the BCH. Now of course it has a cycle, so there is no perfect ranking. And any way you do it, you're going to have at least one back edge. Okay. So now again a natural max CSP like problem is simply going to be find me an ordering of these vertices of a general directed graph which has the fewest back edges. Or this is the same thing as saying, find me a subgraph of your input graph, which is acyclic, and has as many edges as possible. Okay, that's the problem. So we saw that if the graph is perfectly acyclic, no problem, you can find this ranking. What happens if it is almost acyclic? Okay, you're seeing a pattern here. Unfortunately, this was a problem which is open for a long time, but we showed a few years back that this problem also has the same nasty behavior. Namely, even if there is an almost perfect ordering with a tiny fraction of back edges, you cannot find an ordering with less than half minus epsilon back edges. Once again, half is completely trivial, right? Take any ordering and its reversal. One of those will have fewer than half back edges. Okay, so again, a nasty thing. But one caveat here is that it will be great to show this result, but this result, the hard as an asterisk, because this is conditioned on sort of somewhat notorious unique gains conjecture. So it's not so important for this talk I won't define it, but there is a conjectured intractability assumption called unique games conjecture, and if you believe that, then you cannot solve this problem. Okay, so that's another result, and in fact, again, it's given to the CSP workshop. So how does this generalize? That was one very basic ordering CSP or temporal CSP, where the constraints was this guy should be before that, or, you know, A less than B was the constraint. And of course, we saw in yesterday's talk that, you know, there are more general such CSPs, which are, you know, we called it ordering CSPs, but I just learned yesterday that these are called temporal CSPs, and this rich body of work, dichotomy and whatnot. And in this vein, we show that there is a very simple dichotomy in the sense that everything is hard. So all these problems are hard. So what the previous result we generalized, and what we can show is that take any ordering CSP, which simply means it's a temporal CSP for those who know about it, but it just means that you take k of the variables and you say that those k guys should be in some order. And you don't have to pick a single relation, you can pick multiple ones and all those things, but not so important. So we just say that for any such thing, given an instance which is almost satisfiable, under the unique games conjecture, you are in trouble in the sense that you won't be able to satisfy more than r sub gamma of the constraint. What is R sub gamma? R sub gamma is going to be what you can achieve if you simply took a random permutation of the elements without even looking at the instance. Right? So for the max acyclic subgraph, it was 1/2, because if you just pick the random ordering for each A comma B pair, A will be less than B with probability 1/2. So if you took the betweenness problem where the constraints are that B is between A and C, if you took a random ordering, it will be 1/2. Okay, whatever that number is. So as long as it's less than 1, which it will be unless everything satisfies the constraint, you have a very strong hardness result. Okay. And one other interesting point is that this is, we saw a little bit of this of going from the infinite to the finite, and that's how this is proved. So you replace these things, this ordering CSPs by a proxy CSP over a finite domain, and apply some ingredients from Raghavendra's work for finite CSPs to get this result. And again, so this shows a very simple dichotomy, but sort of a sad but simple dichotomy, that the trivial relation is easy. Okay, if every ordering will please the relation, it's easy to satisfy the relation. And pretty much really everything else is hard and in a strong sense. Okay, conditioned, and of course, if this looks too nasty to be true, then basically it means you don't believe the unique games convex. So because this, remember, is there's one caveat that this is conditioned. Okay, so, but that's, okay, enough bad news. So, this is, you see a pattern, but, you know, the theory won't be so interesting in some sense if everything is of this flavor. So now you sort of must wonder if there is any tractable problem at all which survives, which is somewhat interesting, which survives when you go from the perfectly satisfiable case to the slightly unsatisfiable case. Okay, so that's going to be the theme of the rest of the talk, and we'll see there are. So let's go back to some of our old classic Boolean CSP dichotomy. Let's take, you know, the simplest problems, the Boolean CSPs, which are easy. And we know that essentially there are three non-trivial cases of this. We have 2SAT, and we have linear equations mod 2. And a special case of both of these, which is quite well studied in optimization, is cut constraints, where you simply say X is not equal to Y. And of course, you have a Horn SAT, okay, and dual Horn SAT and so on, which are all the same as this. So these are really the three distinct cases, all of which are easy. So now we can ask, how do these guys behave? So given, if I give you a satisfiable instance, you can decide that, you can find a satisfying assignment, all that. Suppose I give you a 1 minus epsilon satisfiable input of this, which means that there is an assignment satisfying 1 minus epsilon of this. And again, you should think of epsilon as a tiny constant for this term, okay, 0.001, if you wish. What can you do algorithmically? Okay, and Zwick was the first person to sort of study, you know, the question in this context for these three problems in a paper I like very much from 98. So what is known about this? Let's just make some notation. So satisfiability says that given an instance which is, at least as a search version, is suppose I give you an instance which is satisfiable, find me an assignment, satisfying assignment. Okay. So how do we want to generalize this? So we want to say given a CSP instance which is almost satisfiable, find me an assignment which satisfies almost all constraints. Okay, and these two almost need not be the same. So I just want to, because otherwise you'll get hard problems. In fact, even the 2SAT problem would be hard. So what I would mean is, for example, maybe the CSP is 99% satisfiable. I will be content with a 90% one. Okay, or maybe 99.9 versus 99. Okay, we don't like these numbers. More generally, the way we're going to define it is, suppose you give me a 1 minus epsilon satisfiable instance of CSP, can you give me a satisfying assignment which satisfies 1 minus g of epsilon of the constraints? But the only thing I really want about g is that in the limit, as epsilon goes to 0, g also goes to 0. Okay, so this is what I want. And it will generalize satisfiability because if you put g to be epsilon is 0, you will get g of epsilon is 0. So that's satisfying. And this just means you're a little more robust. So if you're perfectly satisfiable, you find a perfect satisfying assignment. And if you go tiny bit away, 1 minus epsilon, you don't collapse completely, like all these problems we saw earlier, but you do something good. Okay, so let's see what's known for these three problems. So these three problems now behave differently. So for linear equations mod 2, we already saw by Hostad's result that you give me a 1 minus epsilon satisfiable thing, forget 1 minus g of epsilon, you cannot even beat 1/2. Okay, very, very strong hardness result. And the other two problems, however, have a better story. So for 2SAT, Zwick gave an algorithm which achieved a g of epsilon, which was cube root of epsilon. So he said, give me a 1 minus epsilon thing, you can do 1 minus cube root epsilon. And this, of course, satisfies the constraint that this goes to 0 as that goes to 0. And later this was improved in a paper by Charikar and Makarchev to square root epsilon. Okay, and this, so this is better than this because this is a bigger number than this. Okay, and in fact the resolution of this was one of the original motivations of the unique games conjecture, and in Coates' paper he almost showed that this is a slight difference, but he essentially showed that this, you cannot beat this. So if you believe the unique games conjecture for 2SAT, given a 1 minus epsilon thing, you can do 1 minus square root epsilon, but not something better. You cannot make this 1 minus epsilon to the 0.4. Okay, so really kind of we understand that this is doable, and if you believe the unique games conjecture, we also know what G of epsilon is. Okay, that's the story. What about Hahn-Sack? So Hahn-Sack in the same paper gave an algorithm which, given a 1 minus epsilon satisfiable thing, found a satisfying assignment which was 1 minus 1 over log 1 over epsilon. Okay, this also is a good algorithm in the sense that it goes to 0 as epsilon goes to 0, but it goes to 0 much slower than this. It's sort of exponentially worse. Okay, but at least it, you know, it goes to 0. But then it, you know, sort of, it's a natural question, why is there this discrepancy? Can you maybe improve this? And recently with Yuan Zhou, we showed that this is, if you believe the unique games conjecture again, this is essentially tight. So somehow, Hahn-Sack is a little bit harder to satisfy robustly because you get this exponential drop. Okay. And let's see another example. I've talked about unique games a lot. Okay, that's another CSP. For those who don't know what unique games is, very quickly, it's simply a binary CSP over a large domain, large finite domain. And to tell a CSP, I need to tell you what are the relations. And here, the relations are simply going to be functions which are bijections. So that's all a unique games. That's all unique games is. Okay, for this audience, that's the most succinct definition I can give. And for this, it's easy to decide satisfiability because you can take an arbitrary variable, give it say value 1, and that's essentially going to force the value. You take a walk from that, and that will force the value of everything. And if that works, good. If not, try the next value and so on, and you will find a good one. Okay, so it's easy to decide satisfiability. In fact, it also has a robust satisfying assigned algorithm. So given a 1 minus epsilon satisfiable thing, it is possible to find an assignment which satisfies 1 minus square root epsilon log k of the constraint. Okay, and the reason I sort of say this is, well, this is another nice example where robust satisfiability is possible. And also it's important that in defining this g of epsilon and so on, I'm going to think of the domain size as fixed and really let epsilon go to 0 after that. Because otherwise it's not robustly satisfied. So just to kind of point that out. So unique games also has robust satisfiable. Okay, so we have seen three examples. Now one thing was, so I just want to comment on Hahn-Sack versus 2SAT. In one sense, as we have already seen, Hahn-Sack seems harder than 2SAT because the loss is exponentially worse than what you got for 2SAT. And also another result is that, so this, the fact that this loss is needed assumed the unique games conjecture, but even without the unique games conjecture, you can prove that given a 1 minus epsilon satisfiable thing, you cannot satisfy a 1 minus epsilon to the C of the constraints for some C less than 1. For this is doable for Hahn-Sack. There is no such result known for 2SAT without assuming the unique games conjecture. And indeed, I would view such a result as a big breakthrough. So in this sense, Hahn-Sack is easier to show hardness for, and therefore is a harder problem. Okay, and some sense. But in a different sense, actually, Hahn-Sack is easier, and we'll come to that also in the rest of the talk, because the algorithm, Zwick's algorithm for Hahn-Sack is based on a linear programming relaxation. Whereas for robust satisfiability, you cannot do it with linear program. It's known. Linear programs don't have the power to do it, and in fact, it requires a generalization called semi-definite program. So in this sense, you get a worse result, but the tools you use are sort of, you know, much simpler. So easier or harder is in your eyes. Okay, but this is the situation. And I just want to say, you know, just one or two slides of how do we, just to give you a flavor, how does one show, for example, that Hahn-Sack you cannot beat this 1 over log 1 over epsilon. Okay, where does this come from? And for this, there is this very general theorem of Raghavendra, which, you know, built upon sequence of works assuming the unique games conjecture, which said that there is a basic semi-definite programming relaxation for every CSP, such that if you have a gap for that semi-definite program, then that translates into a hardness. Okay, so this statement will not make sense to you if you don't know these terms, but just give you a flavor. So you take some combinatorial object, semi-distance program, and you take its limitation, you know, and then by the Unigames conjecture, that automatically translates into hardness. So you go from combinatorics to complexity for free with the Unigames pass. Okay, so just think of that. That's how you get these things. And what we show with Yuan is that for Hansatt, you can give an instance where the best assignment will satisfy only 1 minus 1 over k of the constraints, but the SDP, the same SDP which Raghavendra needs, will have a much better value. Okay, and if you take 2 to the minus k to be epsilon, we get the 1 minus epsilon versus 1 minus log 1 over epsilon. And the instance is simple enough that I can at least show you the instance. I won't be able to show you the SDP solution. The instance is the following. It's a Horn 3 SAT instance. And basically start with these are the constraints, x0, y0, and then you say that x0 and y0 implies both x1 and y1, and continue on for k steps, and then you finally negate the x case. Of course, this is unsatisfiable, because if you start with the x0, y0 to be true, these must also be true, but they are false. So trivially, you cannot, and since there are only about 2k constraints, every satisfying assignment must fail to satisfy about 1 over k of the constraints. That's the integer part. And the tricky part here is somehow you have to construct a good SDP solution which has a value which is exponentially better. Okay, and we are able to do that, and you can look at the paper or ask me later. But, okay, so it's really a combinatorial object, and by unique games that gives you the hardness. Okay, so now actually in the last 10 minutes I'll come to what I think is the main point of giving this talk, is to make a conjecture really. So you have seen some examples. So what have we seen so far? We saw some optimization problems, all of which were easy but became intractable in a strong sense with noise. And then we moved to the world of CSPs and saw some CSPs at least, which did not have this behavior, namely two SAT, HornSAT, and Unigames. Okay, all of these, at least you could do something if the problem was near satisfied. So it's a natural question, what's behind this? What makes a CSP robustly satisfiable? So the main point of this talk is to, you know, advertise this conjecture which Yuan Zhou and I made, that a CSP admits a robust satisfiability algorithm if and only if it has bounded width. Okay, so that's the conjecture. And so what is bounded width? I don't need to say this for this audience. It's bounded width seems to almost have an unbounded number of characterizations. That's the way I sort of think of it. But you know, you can say it admits non-trivial, you know, W and U polymorphisms of all arity beyond a point. Or really the nicest thing is just the local consistency algorithm is always correctly able to decide satisfiability. Okay, so like how your HornSAT or 2SAT algorithm or Unigames algorithm runs. And of course by these deep results from a couple of years back, we know that it's also the same as those CSPs which are unable to encode linear equations. So somehow linear equations do not have bounded width, and that's the only obstacle. Okay, so that's these deep results. And that, you know, thanks to these results, at least one half of the conjecture is true, okay, which is good, because it's if and only if. Because if a CSP is the only if part, or the necessity of bounded width is clear, because if it is not of bounded width, then it can encode linear equations. And then by Hastad's result, you cannot have a robust satisfiability algorithm. So bounded width is needed, and so the real part in this conjecture is to say that if you are bounded width, then you have a robust satisfiability algorithm. We know you have a satisfiability algorithm. I'm asking for a better algorithm. Okay. So just to see some examples that it's, you know, when you make a conjecture, you obviously generalize from examples. And if you take the cut problem, 2SAT, Unigames, HornSAT, all of these have bounded width. And all of these also have robust satisfiability algorithms. If you take linear equations mod 2, it does not have bounded width. And it doesn't have a. And HornSAT in particular has width 1, which simply means that it really work at with one variable at a time in these local consistency thing. So why is width 1 important? So there's recently been, so some of this conjecture has generated quite a bit of interest. And so there's recently been some progress on this conjecture. So in fact, three groups, and it's now two groups after something, have addressed this problem. And tomorrow in Victor's talk, we'll hear more about this progress. But one result which has come out is that certainly the width one case you can robustly satisfy And in fact, it's a characterization. A CSP has width 1 if and only if it can be decided by the basic LP relaxation. Okay. So I don't have time for the LP relaxation, but it's the same thing which we saw in the summer school. You just write some local distributions which are consistent on variables. And this algorithm generalizes Wick's result for Hahn-Sack, because Hahn-Sack is a width 1 CSP, and indeed the linear programming algorithm worked. And this also gives a very nice relation between the sort of algebraic world and the optimization world. So it's sort of nice to see. Okay, so I just want to say, sketch really at, how this is done. So there are two parts, the only if part and the if part. So the only if part means that if you give me a width 1 CSP, you should give me a good algorithm for it. And interestingly, there are a couple of ways to do this. So one way is to say, if you have a width 1 CSP, then it has good polymorphisms, but it has very, very nice structured polymorphisms, which are called set operations. So the polymorphism only depends on the set of values it sees, not how many there are, they're ordering, nothing else. Okay, so these are called set operations. And this has been known for some time now. And it's not hard to take these set polymorphisms and use them to round. So you write a linear program and you somehow use these polymorphisms to round the LP solution to an assignment. And then you have to analyze it. Okay. And I like this because this is somehow the fact that polymorphisms are at the heart of rounding procedures is sort of been a moral theme. But it's something which should be explored more, and this gives a concrete case where it's really the case and you actually see it in use. Okay, instead of just saying that, this is what is going on. But, this is sort of nice to see. Because if you take classical algorithms like Gomans, Williamson for MaxCut, I don't quite know how to nicely think of it as a polymorphism-based rounding. But here you see this. And the if part basically says that since you're decided by the basic LP, any instance you cook up for which the LP has value as full value must also be satisfiable. And you can use that to get set operations of every arity, and that shows the point. Okay. Okay. So I'm almost out of time, but I just want to say, what are future steps? How might you prove this conjecture? Now, one thing which is nice is that in some sense here, we sort of know what. So what do we need to prove? We need to prove that if there is bounded width, you can give me a robust satisfying algorithm. In fact, there is a natural candidate algorithm, which is based on semi-definite programming. Because in fact, if you believe the unique games conjecture, then in semi-definite programs are universal for approximating CSPs. And therefore, if you believe our conjecture and the UGC, maybe that's asking for too much, but but if you believe those two things, then we know the algorithm. It really should be SDP based. And the only thing to prove is that that algorithm works. So you have to prove that if the SDP has large value, then the instance must also have a good satisfying assignment. Okay, at least for the value problem, this would suffice. And hopefully the way you prove this will also be algorithmic, so it will give you a solution. And as a first step to this, can we prove the epsilon equals 0 case of this? So can you prove, can you give an alternate algorithm for bounded with CSPs based on SDPs? Can you prove that for bounded with CSPs, if the SDPs will correctly decide satisfiability? Okay, that seems like a necessary and good first step towards this goal. Okay, can I take 2 minutes?
I think so.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so I think this is the last but one slide. So I just want to close with, so that's just a little bit on how you might prove this. You really have to go from width 1 was LPs, and LPs cannot do anything more than width 1, so that story is done. And you just have to somehow prove SDPs handle the remaining case, and then the conjecture would be true. Okay. And let's now also, I want to conclude with some, let me see what I have next. So I just want to speculate on one possible way, which may or may not be the best way to prove that SDPs have this robust satisfiability thing. So what causes the tractability of a CSP? I don't, need to say this to this audience. So it's by the algebraic dichotomy conjecture, a CSP is tractable really only because it has some non-trivial polymorphism. Okay, and a polymorphism is something which combines some number of tuples in a relation to another one in the relation. So you have trivial projection polymorphisms, which we call dictators in the approximation world. And then if you take 2SAT, majority is a polymorphism, which is non-trivial. and linear equations mod 2, you can XOR three things. On that, you could take the minimum or the AND. And these are non-trivial polymorphisms, and indeed, these things are all tractable. Okay, so just old story for this crowd. Now, if you want to get robust satisfiability, what would suffice in terms of polymorphisms? So if you somehow get non-trivial polymorphisms which are noise stable, then that would suffice. So what does noise stable mean? I won't define it formally. It simply means that if I take a random input to the polymorphism and then it spits out some value. And now if I change each of these inputs to some random value with some small probability, the output shouldn't change that much with that high probability. And again, best to see an example. So if you took 2SAT or HornSAT, those polymorphisms are majority on AND, and these are noise stable. So if they take a random input and then just change each input with some tiny probability epsilon, the output will not change. Hey, it will change, but it will change with the probability which goes to zero with epsilon. Whereas the problem is linear equations, if I take XOR of many things, and if I flip each one of them with a small probability, the output will change with probability almost half. So, you know, parity is very noise sensitive. Okay, and that's, you know, again, we speculate from examples. So maybe this is the source of robust satisfiability, so we could try to do. So one thing is, can you somehow crank through this polymorphism machinery and somehow get polymorphisms for which you can argue about their noise stability? Okay, this would be very nice. And there is, I should have cited the Kuhn and Segedi work, which really sort of merged this algebra and analytic viewpoints nicely, but I think it sort of falls short of giving something as strong as this. Okay, but there's certainly been attempts in this general space. Okay, so this is my last slide. So I just want to sort of make some general remarks. So there are two conjectures which are prominent for us in CSPs. One is algebraic dichotomy conjecture, where we have tractability because you have non-trivial polymorphisms. And the interesting thing is that, you know, if you believe in this conjecture, you believe that you know all the hard cases. So you sort of believe that unless there is a reason to be hard, you are easy, kind of thing, or it's the other way around. So anyway, it doesn't matter. So the open part is algorithmic part. So you think you know all the hard cases. The only thing is to show algorithms. Now, the unique games conjecture can also be viewed as saying you get approximation algorithms because you have certain kind of polymorphisms. Okay, so I have an asterisk here, and this is very similar to what Peter talked about today morning. So you can define a notion of approximate multimorphism or polymorphism. You get a distribution on polymorphisms, and if you have such polymorphisms which are sufficiently non-trivial, namely they have low influence, then you get approximation. That's what the unique games conjecture says. And the unique games conjecture essentially says that you don't get any other algorithms. So here you think you have found all the hard cases. Here we believe, you know, we have found all the easy cases, and anything else is hard, and that's the hard, you know, showing that is what is open. Okay. And so one other point in light of the previous two talks which talked about max CSP and so on, if you believe the unique games conjecture, it also implies the dichotomy for the max CSP problem, but only for finding the values. This is sort of I just put this thing in half an hour back, but so EGC also implies some sort of dichotomy for max CSP problems. Okay, again, because of these machineries which say that if you believe the UGC, SDP is the universal algorithm. Okay, and so this is the last point I want to make. So this robust satisfiability, the conjecture is appealing. It says what bounded width buys you. And it all gives you an interesting bridge between the algebraic approach and these approximation, what we have been doing in the approximation world. And what I like is the fact that polymorphisms are at least one of the algorithms for width one CSP is explicitly used in rounding. And that seems like a connection between polymorphisms and rounding algorithms deserve further exploration, and this is one nice case. Thanks.